The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good morning, happy Saturday, and welcome to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show here on News Talk 710 KNUS. Great to be with you this morning on what will be, we just have a lot to talk about today, and I want you to be a part of the conversation at 303-696-1971. That is our telephone number. You can also text into the show on the 710 KNUS app on your smartphone. Include your name in town, if you wish to chime in that way. In addition, you can connect with me on social media. A couple of ways to do that, at Sang Center, Sang with an E, not an A, Center on Twitter, and you can reach out, follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/Jimmy Sangenberger Pro, or just search Jimmy Sangenberger Media Personality on Facebook. And a couple of ways to email yours truly directly. One is via the 710KNUS website at 710KNUS.com. Just go to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show page. You can also reach me via email at my website, jimmysangenberger.com. Keep in mind, there's no A, I, or U in Sangenberger. It's all E's all the time. Once you know that, Sangenberger is easy. So, today on the program, and again, 303-696-1971, our telephone number, we will spend a lot of time talking about what happened in Denver Public Schools. I know you heard it throughout the week. I've been following it closely. I wrote my column yesterday in the Denver Gazette about this very topic and exclusively got one of the school board members on the record over the issue of whether or not SROs, school resource officers, should not just be back permanently through June 30th, as the board voted, and on a very limited basis, by the way, but permanently, indefinitely, letting schools make decisions on whether or not they want SROs back in there. And most of the schools, I would figure, would say, yes, absolutely. So I have a lot to say on this, and we have some new news that was coming from 9 News last night regarding another student in Denver Public Schools at a middle school who has been undergoing pat-downs every day, who is accused of attempted murder, first-degree murder, charged with it and charged with illegal discharge of a firearm. But it happened off campus. So DPS, shrugging it off. Let's just be clear about something here. As they go through a gun control debate, deceiving kids at East High School, that's what the Democrats are doing right now. And officials in Denver Public Schools, by the way. They are deceiving kids about gun control, making them think that raising the age from 18 to 21 for owning a firearm would have made a damn difference in any of these East High School incidents. It wouldn't have. In fact, as I point out in yesterday's Gazette column, which we'll go over today, shooting makes the case for campus cops. The kid at East who took his life earlier this week after shooting 2 administrators, that student, that kid, was 17 years old. He was not 18. And when he was put on probation for weapons charges, including having a so-called ghost gun, in 2021, you do the math, he was like 15. Then you go to the shooting that happened previously near campus when 16-year-old Luis Garcia was fatally shot and injured. The other two students involved in that shooting, the suspects, under the age of 18. So age alone shows that one wouldn't have made a difference. Red flag laws are intended specifically for the idea that we want to keep guns away from people who have some sort of mental issue. Whether you agree with red flag laws or not, they would not have applied to a kid who was not even legally allowed to own or purchase a firearm in the first place. This is why we will talk with State Representative Gabe Evans coming up at about 8:10 this morning. The Republicans in the House have been filibustering the Democrats' three bills. I just went over two of them there to raise the age and do the red flag law. Expand that to educators and district attorneys and a few others to have the empowerment of using red flag. And we will have on Representative Evans, who was part of that filibuster. And they've been able to push debate further back to 9 a.m. this morning. This is good to see the Republicans in the House who are so far behind gathering together and saying, guys, we got to fight this tooth and nail, even if it's going to pass. And they're doing their job and they're doing it right. And they're doing it well. It's good to see. That's a little bit of encouraging news. Representative Gabe Evans will be coming up later. But not only would gun control not have these gun control bills not have applied to any of the students that we're talking about for shooting incidents at East High School, but also district policy is at the root of all this. A few weeks ago, I wrote about in a column, maybe it was a month, 2 months ago, about how you have crime time on campuses with cops gone. But I also talked about, and we discussed it on the show, what's called the discipline matrix. In 2020, DPS, Denver Public Schools, got rid of the SROs on campuses. But in 2021, they passed a discipline matrix that significantly reduced the instances, severely limited the circumstances during which you could go ahead, if you are a staff member at a school, and call the police to say, come onto campus, we have an issue. And then the exceptions that prove the rule are the most serious of crimes, the ones that you have to report. Physical assault, sexual assaults, things like that. Otherwise, for the most part, a teacher or a student who's a victim has to call the police themselves. And DPS policy seems less interested in protecting students than in disciplining them or keeping them off of campus. Which brings me to another very important point about 17-year-old Austin Lyle. As I mentioned, he was already on probation for weapons violations in 2021, including building a ghost gun. He was previously expelled from Cherry Creek School District's Overland High School for violating board policy. Now, he eventually transferred to Denver's East High School, of course, as we know, and was required to undergo his daily weapons pat-down. So here is the question, as I posed yesterday in my column. Why wasn't Lyle placed in remote learning, which was supposedly satisfactory for all DPS kids during the pandemic, to mitigate the potential threat he posed to others? It was good enough for all the kids during COVID. Even after the height of the emergency, they insisted. Tay Anderson insisted. And he said he attacked parents who wanted their kids back in school. That school board member who they voted vice president after he was censured by the previous board for flirting coercively with two underage school kids, at least two, and for intimidating witnesses during the investigation. They made that joker vice president. And he had the audacity to attack parents who wanted their kids back in schools. And that, and yet DPS policy wouldn't allow or wouldn't encourage, say, online learning or some other alternative for a troubled kid like this. Well, we're learning that it's even worse. Nine News reporting that the principal of Denver's largest middle school, McAuliffe International School, well, he tells Nine News that his school must also perform daily pat-downs on a student charged with, among other things, attempted first-degree murder and illegal discharge of a firearm. He told him, quote, "I think it's important that people know, and I think it's important that parents know. I think it's important that school leaders speak out and say, this is not okay and needs to stop." He believes he's also not the only principal, which we can be assured of that. "When I saw what happened at East, I recognized the similarities and it really hit a nerve. And I know this is happening beyond McAuliffe International School." So what he is saying is that shortly after learning about the crime, the charges of including attempted murder, Dennis said that he and his staff attempted to convince DPS to let the student perform online classes. That request was denied by, ding, 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 the district. He then asked the district to expel the student. That request was also denied. In a document obtained by Nine News, the student discipline program manager said, quote, "As there is no evidence that the student was in possession of a firearm on his school grounds or at any other DPS school, the request for an extended suspension and expulsion hearing is denied. Please return the student to school." And so for the past few weeks, Dennis and his staff have been performing the same so-called safety measures Lyle faced at East. Daily pat-downs, he says, he and his staff never been trained to do. Never been trained to do. "Are you mad?" he was asked. "Yes, frustrated. I recognize that every kid deserves an education, regardless of their state in the legal system. That kid deserves a free public education, but there is more than one way to do it." Like hell there is, absolutely. There is. Whether that is remote learning, or it is in a campus that is intended for troubled youths, they exist. Provide a safer environment for kids in schools. This is a failure that goes all across the board. Cherry Creek Schools, remember last year, I was all up in arms, especially during the spring, about Cherry Creek Schools and when we were learning of revelations about how they were failing to keep victims of sexual assault from their alleged perpetrators, alleged assaulters, and other failures to keep kids away from each other who needed to be, or to keep a kid out of school who should have been kept out of school, or found an alternative way to educate that student. DPS brought in Austin Lyle of East High School from Cherry Creek School's Overland High School. Brought him in. And then said, you know what, we're going to do these pat-downs. If this principal in middle school is saying they were never trained to do a pat-down, my question now becomes, were any staff at the high school trained to do a pat-down? Now, I had communicated this week with the Denver Police Department and learned that they say, as the school board attests, that they could not conduct the pat-down, the police could not conduct a pat-down even if they were there. Here's a little tidbit from the press conference on Thursday in that regard.
So, Superintendent Marrero. This as an opportunity to clarify the procedures. An armed officer, whether it was an SRO or an armed officer that happened to be on site, would have never patted down that student. An officer, in order to search a student, they need to have probable cause. It is practice for an educator to have that leeway under the caretaker exemption. So those of us who done it. I see several administrators who had worn that hat. We need to have consent of the student or the parent and engage in a search with possibly authority watching and supervising. So it is common practice across the nation under the caretaker exemption law.
Will that change now?
It will not change. That will continue to be our policy.
So DPD, Denver Police Department, told me, quote, generally speaking, if an officer conducts a pat down or search of a student, that should be based upon reasonable suspicion or probable cause that the individual has a weapon or something else illegal to possess, such as narcotics. You know, I do think they, in this Lyle case, had sufficient probable cause. Leroy and I were talking about this before going on the air. But at least they say, quote, perhaps a DPD officer or DPS campus security officer could be present during a safety check based upon the needs or concerns of staff. You better believe that if an armed police officer was standing right by as these administrators were conducting the pat down, that is very likely this student probably wouldn't have brought the gun to school, or if he did, fired it. Now, let's get very clear on an example before we run to our first break. Last month, 2 days after Luis Garcia was shot, a 9mm pistol was confiscated from a student on East High's campus. Reports indicated the firearm was discovered solely because school resource officers had been temporarily stationed on campus for the rest of that week. So again, what if an SRO, an armed SRO, was in the room on Wednesday during Lyle's pat down? Luis's brother Santos Garcia told 9 News, quote, it could have been avoided if there was a cop there, you know, to prevent anything like this from happening. They were able to catch a gun that a student brought to school. What happened? Monday, Luis Garcia was shot fatally. They closed school the next day, Tuesday. Wednesday, they come back, the first day back from school after that incident. They have armed officers there, and they catch a kid with a gun with a serial number scratched off. I think there might have been. I think it was scratched off. By the way, they caught a gun of a 9mm pistol. That was the day after they returned to school after that incident. And I'm hearing reports more and more from folks in the know. I don't know how many weapons are coming into school, but they're a hell of a lot. Now, yesterday in my column for the Denver Gazette, one school board member went on the record regarding whether or not permanent school resource officers should be brought back, not just temporary through June 30th, as the board voted this week. Who and what did this individual say? We will get to that coming up on the other side. 303-696-1971. I would be remiss if I didn't mention, top of the next hour, we will have on the program Mike Eaton, who from 2011 to 2022 was the chief of safety, the Department of Safety for Denver Public Schools. And we will get his insights on SROs and school safety procedures and so forth coming up then at 7:05. You will not want to miss that. We have much to do. 303-696-1971. Our telephone number. Is this negligence on the part of the school district? Is there justification for, Stefan and I talked about this on Wednesday, for maybe some kind of lawsuit or maybe even a class action suit against the district? What do you think? 303-696-1971. I'm already fired up. I've been waiting for a few days to get to talk about this. And I want you to join the conversation. I'm Jimmy Sangenberger, just getting started. News Talk 710 KNUS. Could Big Mama Thornton, the originator of the tune Hound Dog, could she be singing about Tay Anderson decades, decades before? You know, he wouldn't answer questions at the school board press conference on Thursday.
And just to be fair, I want to extend this question to Ayonte Anderson. Mr. Anderson, you led the way.
We're just going to be having President Gaetan speak on behalf of the Board of Education and Superintendent Marrero on behalf of Denver Public.
So I can't ask the question for Mr. Anderson right now?
Not today.
Okay. Was he part of the conversations in the closed session and the meeting throughout the day?
He was.
May I please ask him a question? I've spoken to him about this matter before.
Not today. We're just going to stick with President Gaetan on behalf of the Board and Superintendent Marrero. Yes.
Is there a reason for that?
Because he had his appendix removed earlier this week, so he had to be in a wheelchair, and he couldn't really speak very much, even though when he wasn't on camera, he was walking, I hear. He was walking a little bit. Oh, my goodness. Welcome back to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. More on Tay Anderson coming up. We might sing a little Tay Anderson victim blues this morning on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Good to be with you. We'll get to texts and phones in just a moment. But I want to bring up what I teased before the break, and that is a school board member I had exclusively on the record and the opinion of a school board member on the permanent restoration of school resource officers. Now, why this is notable is because, as I write in my column, this is the first school board member to say, you know what, we need to bring them back permanently, or at least let schools decide. Not just say, no, we're just doing something temporary right now. I wrote the following in my column yesterday for the Denver Gazette. Shooting makes the case for campus cops. Please check it out and share it. If SROs are acceptable for the next 2 or 3 months, why aren't they good enough for the next 2 or 3 years? For Director Charmaine Lindsay, who filled a vacancy last year and isn't running for re-election this fall, meaning, folks, she's got no political motivation. She's not trying to curry favor with the public here. They are. She is the first board member to publicly stand with parents, students, and community members and publicly endorse indefinitely reinstating SROs, not just Marrero's temporary measure. Quote Charmaine Lindsay on the DPS board. I'm in favor of bringing SROs back permanently on a school-by-school basis. By the way, I would think most schools would say yes, especially at this point. And leaving it up, back to her quote, leaving it up to parents and administration to jointly decide what to do. I think to a certain extent they provide a deterrent effect. And I think there's less of a likelihood that someone will walk into a school with a gun when an SRO is present. Here's what's interesting, too. Lindsay would go a step further. Charmaine Lindsay also wants to install metal detectors at large Denver high schools, believing they would further discourage students from, quote, carrying weapons into the building. So you finally have at least one board member who's gotten with the program and said this temporary measure isn't enough. And that was revealed exclusively in my column yesterday in the Denver Gazette. But let's be clear about something, too. With this temporary measure, which isn't much, we'll go over it more later, through June 30th, what did it take to make this happen? A superintendent bucking board policy by temporarily returning SROs to campus after another shooting. Now, Sochi Gaetan, the president of the DPS board, was asked about whether or not they flip-flopped on the issue of school resource officers. This was in the press conference on Thursday. And here is at least the beginning of what she said.
I want to first off share for folks that may not know that as a board, we govern under a model called the policy governance model. And so we develop end statements or a vision. End statements means a vision for the district. We also use executive limitations, which are guardrails for our superintendent. He then takes that information and he gets to determine how he will deliver upon this vision. So I want to share with you that in our end statements, which you'll read.
Let me just cut her off right there. Because the superintendent had a policy in place which he acknowledged when he said he was going to station two resource officers at the campus at East through the end of the school year and one at every other high school or comprehensive high school through the end of the school year, he acknowledged it's probably violating board policy to do this. He did it himself. Now, you can give him however much credit you want for taking that initiative and forcing the hand of the board. But policy governance has absolutely nothing to do with what happened here. In fact, if Marrero was following policy governance, he would have never done it in the first place. And then guess what? The school board would have never brought back SROs through June 30th. But here's one more point, and we'll get to the phones and texts. The board had canceled its scheduled Thursday public meeting, opting instead for a morning executive session, ostensibly over school safety. Now, here's the thing. They spent 5 freaking hours behind closed doors in executive session, and under state statute, their purported legal basis for going into a closed door meeting is flimsy at best. I read the legal basis. It had to do with privacy concerns. Okay. Go into executive session for maybe an hour to ask some questions that you could not talk about publicly. And then if your goal is to craft a resolution and hash out a memorandum and a resolution, a memorandum on what you're going to do with regards to SOROs and so forth, school resource officers, and a resolution calling for the passing of an assault weapons ban, as though that was going to be a panacea, or not a panacea, a solution here. If you're going to do that, that needs to be out in the public. That needs to be out in the open. There's no legal basis for that. Given the gravity of the situation and the public interest being so significant as well, why did the board hide behind closed doors rather than meet in the open for that 5 hours? What did they have to hide from the public in crafting a memorandum that they came out? And here, listen to the vote. President open for debate in the public.
Seeing none. Ms. Atwood, would you please call the roll?
Would you please call the roll? And then they all voted yes on this. That there was no public debate or discussion, just a press conference after, where Sochi Gaitan, the president of the school board, and Alex Marrero, the superintendent of the district, were the only ones to answer questions. We got texts, we got emails, we got a call. 303-696-1971. Let's go to Ralph in Denver. Good morning. You're on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show.
Good morning, Jimmy. You're really jamming this morning. I mean, wow. This is all true. Well, about the class action lawsuit you're talking about, I believe there was a law passed in 1964, a federal law that says that we have a right to, for an education, and all the public schools have to have a safe environment for these students and kids. And they haven't been doing that. They've broken the law. So double check that, see if I'm correct on that.
So I'm not sure about 1964, but yes, they're supposed to provide a safe learning environment. Now, how you determine culpability and whether or not they failed is a different matter legally. I'm not George, for example. I'm no lawyer or former prosecutor. But this does seem like almost a willful negligence on the part of the school district in terms of its policies and procedures here. And I do think that they have not provided a safe learning environment for kids, probably in violation of the law.
And they haven't been doing that since Columbine High School.
Yeah.
Remember that sheriff that actually shot back? He was there, right? I think his name was Daryl. I can't remember his name. Daryl. I can't remember his name. He should have got an award. Instead, they fired him, remember? He was told to stand down.
Ralph, yeah, this is just tragic. It really is. Ralph, I appreciate the call, and thanks for hanging on there here on the program. 303-696-1971. Speaking of Columbine, let's go to Frank DeAngelis on Stephen Tubbs' show yesterday, the longtime principal of Columbine High School.
I truly believe that if a school resource officer was the person on campus, that we know that student is being checked for weapons, that if there was a school resource officer who was armed there, I think that student would not have risked coming in knowing that if that gun was exposed, there was a good chance it wasn't going to turn out well.
Even if, I couldn't agree more with Frank DeAngelis, and even if they had still had the staff conduct the pat down, but a SRO, school resource officer, was in the room, definitely believe that would have made a difference. Email coming in from Tim via jimmysangenberger.com. Is there a difference in federal funding for students that are physically in school as opposed to those in remote learning? I've often heard that problem students are allowed to remain in school rather than expelling them because of federal funding for fannies in the seat. So that's a great question. I'm not positive, but I believe the cases. And look, if remote learning did not qualify for funding for a school, if that student is still associated with that school, then what about COVID? All throughout COVID, were they not getting money? No, the schools all got their money. But what I think would be the case is if that student is still associated with the school, if that student is doing remote learning through, say, East High School, they're still considered an East High School student. They're just doing it remotely. But here's the thing. Having one fanny in the seat may or may not have made much of a difference. But as I was talking about before, this Nine News story where came out last night about a middle school kid who has been charged with, among other things, attempted first-degree murder and illegal discharge of a firearm. The school, McAuliffe International School, the school's principal specifically requested that they put the kid into online learning. The school wanted to take that initiative, and the district refused. The school principal decided that if what Tim is asking about was true, would have decided, you know what, that's okay, we'll take the hit of one kid. He's still in DPS. If you make him remote learning one way or the other, he's still a DPS student. At least the district will get money. So that kid needs to be removed from school. It's just wild. That would be no excuse. It might be a justification that they would use, but no excuse whatsoever. 303-696-1971. We'll get to more calls, texts, emails on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Already rocking and rolling. We got to run to a break here on News Talk 710 KNUS, Denver's local talk leader. Straight from Serbia. It's a little Serbian blues here for you from Ana Popovic. That guitar is Ana Popovic's playing and her vocals. What an incredible powerhouse. She's tremendous. And yes, indeed, she's from Serbia. Did you know they had blues guitarists in Serbia? Check her out. Ana Popovic, as we continue on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, best damn bumper music known to man, almost 10 years running. Back here at News Talk 710 KNUS, talking about Denver public schools. I think this will dominate the show. I've been wanting to sink my teeth into this all week. And I wrote about a column yesterday. There's so much to be said. We'll speak in the top of the hour with Mike Eaton, former chief of Denver Public Schools Department of Safety. Looking forward to that conversation. Let's go to Aaron in Denver at 303-696-1971. Good morning, Aaron.
Yeah, well, good morning, Jimmy. If anyone I'll be singing the blues, it should be some from Ukraine. But anyway... But the thing is,
we're in Denver, and Denver's feeling the blues this week, brother.
Oh, well, no question about it. But the thing is, though, having the SSROs and metal detectors. I mean, I left school in '87, and we didn't have any SSROs when I was in high school, or the thought of having metal detectors. But things have definitely changed since I left high school. And the thing is, though, the SROs. Since apparently you need these officers in these schools is just being proactive.
Mm-hmm.
And now because two administrators that almost got killed.
Yes.
Patting down this student that shouldn't have this student who had no business having a gun anyway, period.
Yes. Under current law, let's be clear for the gun control advocates.
Yeah, oh, no. Look, you could have a billion in one gun control laws. and this still would have went down.
Aaron, let me ask you, how do you think this kid got the gun? Could it have been given to him from a gang member? Could he have stolen it from his parents? Could it have been because his parents gave it to him? Could it have been because of some other family member or another friend, or he got it on the black market? Any number of reasons we should look into, but it couldn't have been legally purchased no matter what.
Yeah, the thing is, though, haven't had any reports about his parents. Because mm-hmm. the real cause of this insanity is what, when these students go home after school, and they go home, close, and the doors are closed, who is the adult
yes.
in the room?
Exactly. And this kid, remember, it was 2021 that he was put on probation for weapons charges, including having a so-called ghost gun, which, by the way, that means he built a gun himself, mm-hmm. which I don't know about you, but I don't think another gun control law could have actually prevented that, even though they try to make ghost guns illegal.
Yeah, well, like I said, it could have been in one. Guns are just scapegoats, Jimmy. So, I mean, everyone's looking for that instant gratification.
Yes.
Gratification answer. Why we have young students carrying guns to school? Well, the root cause of it is at home. It's like anything. It starts at home.
Well, no, I would actually say it goes a little bit beyond that, because when you provide a resoundingly unsafe school environment, kids may feel that pressure to come armed for their own defense. That could be, say, they're gang members and they're worried about other gang members or intimidation and what have you. That's how you end up with proliferation of guns, where I have sources that think that there could be hundreds of guns every day in Denver public schools.
Oh, well, like I said, though, it's amazing. I mean, I think when I was in high school, my peers, man, we never thought, I don't even think we talked about guns. I mean, it's just unbelievable how things have changed since I were in high school.
Yeah,
and that's, in high school, we talked about other stuff.
Well,
but we didn't talk about guns or gangbangers.
So
none of that stuff.
I will say it. In my case, I was in high school in the mid to late 2000s. So that was post Columbine. There were school shootings that happened. While I remember being in a high school class and one of the mass shootings that happened. So there was some discussion of guns. But this is really what you're getting at here, Aaron, is that this is a social problem. We have a major societal issue going on that is far beyond any sort of gun issue.
Oh, no question about it. And like I said, the 17-year-old young man should have been in an alternative school, should have been in some form of ROTC boot camp.
Remote learning.
Should have been in some kind of trade school. It's sad that you got to bring a gun to school. Have no business having a gun to school. Almost killed two people. Realize that you did something wrong, and then you're going to take that gun and blow your
look,
own brains
here's
out.
The thing. Aaron, here is the thing.
It's a waste of life.
That school district is failing victims and also the potential perpetrators of a crime like this, because they are not getting them the help that they need. They're not putting them in the supportive programs that they need, or they're not teaching them lessons about discipline as well. Aaron, we're up against the break. I appreciate it.
Goodbye.
Great call, Aaron. Have a great weekend. They're not pursuing discipline. What's going on in DPS? What about SROs? Let's talk with Mike Eaton, former chief of safety for Denver Public Schools. At the top of the hour, then we'll open up phones. Keep the texts coming. We will get to more coming up in the next hour. It's the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, Denver's local talk leader, News Talk 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.